session number 32330, rule 2.
What about other FIPO? Did you keep in touch with any?
Yeah.
Did you meet up with other FIPO during those years?
All that lot. They all know me. Every one of them. Yeah. Cambridge, I'm well known.
Yes.
Norwich, I'm well known. I'm known all over East Anglia, really.
The reunion groups that you formed, you started in 1998, yes?
Yeah.
Before that, had you been in touch with any FIPO associations?
Yeah, no. No, I didn't even join Ipswich.
No.
I joined nowhere until I started this, and I thought myself, well, and I sat down and I thought myself, I've got to work out a method when nobody else is used, so I'm going to be the same as them, not be able to get them. So I went round to all the towns and I chose who I thought was the fittest man there. And I asked him to sort of cooperate with me. I said, what I'm going to do, I said, I'll telephone you when I want you and what to do. I said, if you'll go round to the rest of the people and tell them. Because I couldn't go round to them all.
No.
I said, you'll probably find some in the countryside where they join the towns. And that's what I did, and it was 100% success.
Marvellous.
I just phoned each one. His name was Ipswich. I phoned I forget what he was, he's dead now. I phoned him and I finished up getting 3 busloads from Ipswich. Because he went round and told them, they took notice of the people, that that was a genuine thing. There was no kitsch to it.
Yes.
And I formed this committee of people who I knew. And we're still friends now. We still go out together for a drink. We're going out tomorrow, actually, for a drink.
Yeah.
And I told them what I was going to do. And that same committee was with me when I finished. That's what it was when I started. And we used to meet once a month and discuss it, the best ways of raising money. That used to cost us about £3,500 to £4,000.
To put on a reunion?
Yeah.
Right.
Because all the drink and all the food was for nothing. Nobody had to pay anything.
Yes.
And all the help I got was for nothing. I used to get waiters to come and wait on the tables for them. So I didn't have to do anything.
And so the money you raised was done through sponsorship and things?
Well,
like that?
We used to run 2 or 3 dances. And we had the band come from Ipswich Brass Band. They played for us 2 or 3 times in the church. And it was always full. Everywhere we went, it was full.
Mm.
The dancers, we had got at least 3 times the amount what was allowed into the hall. Mm. Because everybody wanted to come.
Yeah.
Because there was good dancers. We used to stop halfway. And the women on the committee, they used to make the food for them. So they had food to eat and everything.
Yeah.
All for the price of a dance ticket.
Very good.
And the band played for nothing. So there's nothing. Then we used to make well £500 or £600 every dance. And then we got a few sort of well-to-do people about it, millionaires. And one of them, who's well known for being a very tight with some money, he knocked on the door. I was living here then. And he said, you're going to get up a reunion. I say, yeah. He owned 100 houses in this locality.
Yeah.
He said, you want the money? I said, well, yeah. I said, it'd be handy. He said, I'll give you 400. Will that be enough? I said, £400. He said, yeah. I said, yeah. And he took it out of his pocket. He said, yeah, it's in cash. I said, there's one thing you'll have to do. He said, what's that? I said, you come to the reunion and see where your money's gone. I'd do that. So he came and brought his wife, and there's 2 or 3 more sort of millionaires. One of them came up and gave me 200, another one gave me 400. Town council, they used to give me 200 every year. The only one who didn't give me nothing was the local one, Baber.
Mm.
They said that wasn't in their rights or something, and we was getting money right, left and centre, you know.
Yeah.
People giving it to us. It was so easy to raise money, it was unbelievable.
Yes.
And the town clerk, I'm friendly with her now, as a matter of fact, we went and had coffee yesterday morning together. And she used to come and bring her associate, and they always used to give me £200 every year towards it.
Yeah.
All the ones who gave me money, I invited, and they had a table of their own up at the top. And I used to tell all the gathering that those were the people who sponsored. I say, you wouldn't be here now if it wasn't for them.
Yeah.
So they all got a good, I mean, And all the sponsors were happy with it, you know.
Yeah.
And all the photographers were always there, you know, local papers.
That's right.
So everything went very, very well, you know. And I got so bad at the finish there that I had to finish it because that was only a one-off thing I started, but it got so good, we'd done for 6 years.
Right.
But I was getting less and less. And at the finish, there's as many women there, the wives of the husbands who died.
Yes.
Who want to come, ask if I could come, which I wasn't going to say no to.
No.
That's what the world's prisoners.
Yeah.
And I was dying in rapidly, so I thought myself was that knock us on the head, I reckon.
Have you belonged to any other groups of FIPO? Have you associated with any others?
No.
Right.
No. The same as tomorrow, you see, now we're going to Ipswich. Now, I got made chairman of that, and there's a chap there, Watson. He used to be on the pensions, and he used to run the FIPO there.
Mm.
And he told him he was going to close it up. He said that they're all dying off. He says it's not worth running now. He says, so I thought about closing it all down. And they say, I say, you're not going to do that. He said, what do you mean you're not going to do it? I said, I'm going to take over as chairman. I said, I don't want you here.
Hmm.
I said, you can go home. I said, don't come back no more. I said, you wasn't a FIPO. You don't understand them. I said, so you go. And he went. He didn't like it. But I took over and I said, now what I'm going to do, I said, I'm going to turn this into a social club. I said, you can bring your wives. I said, I'm going to allow any wife in whose husband was a FIPO.
Mm.
And that's what we do now.
Right.
And we get about 25 to 30 there.
Yes.
All the time.
Right.
And but there's only 5 FIPOs.
Yes.
That's all there is left. But they go, we have a good time. We go, we start about 1:30 and we finish about 4:30 and we have games, we have bingo, we have a couple of hands of bingo, and then we have some quizzes, and
yeah.
We have a good laugh.
Earlier on, when you were talking, you mentioned your two friends that had stuck with you through Heruku and back to Java. Can you describe how important was it to have mates? To have
without mates or friends, you didn't live long.
You saw that, did you?
Yeah. You've got to be in a little group, and not a big group, because you couldn't find enough food for say 7 or 8 people. But you've got to form into little groups to stay alive. You've got to have company. You've got to have somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
But if you didn't, there's so many there, and it's all individuals, but they didn't live because they went off the head at the finish.
Right.
A lot of them did. A lot of them committed suicide.
Yeah.
But us three kept together so close. I remember once they caught some serious illness. I don't know, dysentery or something. So they got and on the island there was 1 and 2 huts. They was all full of people who was going to die very shortly. And they got put into this hut. And I thought myself, no. I thought myself, all the time my leg was bad, they stuck with me. I didn't quite know what to do, so I went in the jungle on my own one night. That's a terrible place to be, especially when you're on your own. And I found some coconuts and bananas, what the natives had put there for the Japs, and I took some. I took them back to camp, and I thought to myself, well, I don't know quite what to do with them now. But funny enough, in the camp, there's always something turning up, and I knew a Dutchman who'd got a blanket.
Mm.
And I went to see him, I said, you want to get rid of that blanket? He said, not particularly. He said, why? I said, I'll give you some coconuts and bananas for it. He said, you haven't got any coconuts and bananas. I said, you come with me. I said, bring your blanket. So he brought his blanket. And I gave him, I think it was 4 coconuts and 6 bananas. And he took it. I gave him my blanket. So I took it down to my mates and covered them both up. That didn't actually save their lives, but it bloody helped a lot.
Yeah. You could look after them.
Yeah.
You could do something.
Yeah, well, they had warmth, they said, because malaria, that's another thing they had.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week later, they come out.
Wow. Made a difference.
Yeah, oh yeah, and they both swore at me for going out there on their own. I was 17, 18 then, grown man.
Now, looking back now from 60 plus years, how do you feel about what you went through? How do you feel about the people that were looking after you, or supposed to be the captors? What do you feel about it?
I've got no time. I'd never go back, same as they brought up at your meeting here last Saturday. Someone went back. I'd never go back there. I'd feel as if I wanted to get hold of them. We went to Singapore. I said to Terry, I said, Neil, when we get out there, I said, if you come across any Japs, I say, don't try and introduce me. I said, I walk on, I've written, wait for you. I said, I just don't want nothing to do with them, no talk to them or nothing. He said, all right. He said, tell you the truth, he said, I said, I'll ignore them too. So that's what we both done, and there was one, two Japs we saw, we just walked right by you.
Yeah.
But either hell, I can go back out there and say they're friendly with him. That, I don't know who he is, he's one of the one of the marshals men. He stood there and said they went back, and you can't blame them Japs for this. That'd be exactly the same as another war. You see that, the way they treat their animals, the whales and things, what they get up to, and the dogs is what they eat and stuff.
Yeah.
That'd be exactly the same. They don't think. The only people who will get them, and that won't be too long now, I shouldn't think, is the Chinese.
Right.
They'll have them. There's three or four in our camp, and they said that our country will build up, and when they're strong enough, we can take our own back on them Japs, what they've done to our country.
Yeah.
And they're building and building new, and they're getting a strong, strong country now, China.
They are indeed.
They'll get their own back. They won't forget what China, what the Japs done to them. No more than we will.
Harold, when you got back to this country, you said you docked at Liverpool, and there was a bit of a reception committee, but not much.
No much, no.
What happened when you got back home? Was there any... did you have any contact from the Navy? Did they?
No, not for a time. And then when I went back to Chatham, that was after about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, they looked up my records and said, oh, you've done your time at Ganges. I said, yeah. And they said, well, what are we going to do with you? They said, you've had it rough so far. We're going to sort of make you a petty officer. We're going to send you on a course. And when you come back, they said, we'll make you a chief petty officer. And your next step will be officer. They said, we're going to do that for you. I said, you're not. They said, why? I said, because I'm going out. They said, you've signed on till you're 39. I said, I know, because your time count when you're 18 and you've got to do 21 years, you do 20 years in a year for the Queen or something.
Yeah.
So I'd have been 39. I said, you've only just turned 20. I said, no. I said, no more. I said, you're not going to hold me here. I said, I'm taking no more orders, not off anybody. I said, I don't mind orders when I've sort of settled down. I said, but not Navy and the discipline and that. I said, I just couldn't take it. Oh, and they had a big meeting about it, and they decided after a time that if I wouldn't accept promotion, they'd let me go.
Right.
So that's one good thing they did do for me. But the country on the whole, they just ignored us altogether. They didn't want us.
When you say us, do you mean Far East and POW?
Yeah, because this government was responsible for so many men getting killed out there, and that was the stupidity of this government. The people in charge out there were terrible. But nobody sort of admitted that when we came back. And Churchill, we looked up to Churchill. He was a damn good bloke. It's undeniable. And, you know, the Japs were afraid of the name Churchill even. But he was responsible for a lot of deaths out there too. The main thing they thought about was the European war. They wasn't worried about the Far East war. They sacrificed us because they knew it was hopeless. They knew the Japs were going to come down, and the only thing they could do was sort of stop them for a little while. But when our captain said that the 15 ships are going to sea against the Jap Navy, destroyer against a battleship, you're not going to get anywhere near it, you're not going to get even within 2 miles of it. And the orders come from White Hall, fight to the last man or some rubbish.
Yeah.
They said it'd been much better to go to Australia and fight again. Not just to turn around and sort of get us all killed, just as simple as that.
No.
But if we hadn't gone, if I'd scattered them ships, the Exeter was there and the Houston. The Exeter went, no, we saw that go down. But that's so pitiful.
Did you meet up with any of the men from the Exeter?
No, not actually. No, I didn't. But there wasn't many got off there, I shouldn't think.
You said at the beginning that you, when you were, I think, right at the very beginning, you said you'd been awarded the DSM.
Yeah.
What was that for?
Shooting down two German planes at Crete. And the pom-poms on the ship. Sort of, I don't know if you know what a pom-pom is.
No.
That's short. And they fire a pattern.
Right.
And there's four barrels. And they all fire at the same time so that you get a pattern around the aeroplane.
Okay.
And the dive bombers came down and they killed, woke up the whole crew. And they pulled the bodies off the gun and it was still loaded. I thought, so I'll have a go at this. And I just aimed it and it's a dive bombers come down. I just aimed it and fired it and I shot two on them down.
And you said you didn't collect your DSM?
No, it's just still up here now.
Why?
I'm not interested. I never wear a medal. I've got 7 medals at home I never wear.
Mm.
Because I think it's an insult giving us medals after that day because I've done a lot more than bloody medals. So I didn't want medals.
No.
But that the old Japs had got a good hold in this country when we came home because they'd got all the business. I mean, I don't know how the hell they worked it, but they sort of got back to a lot of power again now. Look at all the motor industry they've built up, haven't they?
Yes.
They don't worry about people like us. They'll sacrifice us any time. This country is like that. You see, when you come home, the coffin is still going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. You're a hero. But if you come home and you're ill or wounded, they don't know. You're in their way, so you get pushed out. But in the coffin, oh, you're a hero. As a word used, it's absolutely ridiculous how it's used. It don't matter how you get killed or anything, as long as you're in that coffin, you're a hero. It's a bloody insult for me to go out, insult to my friends to go up there and collect that. So I never would go up. No. Terry White still keep on about it, actually.
Mm.
He says, still up there. I said, I don't care if it is. He said, you're a stubborn bugger, ain't you? He said, what are you going to get? I said, I'm not interested. I said, I wouldn't wear it if I got it. Because that wasn't long ago. We went to Wyndham. We got invited there. We go there and we got invited up to Chelsea Barracks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only about 6 weeks ago. And I got this all from Lord Crowbridge or something. He sent me all the particulars. And on the bottom, it's got top hats or something must be worn. And I said to Terry, I said, what's that? He said, you've got a top hat. And I said, not me. I said, you know different than that. He said, ain't you going? I said, no, because I'm not. He said, the Queen is there. I want to meet you. Because she'd heard, apparently, might have been through Terry, that I swam 30 miles. He said, are you interested in meeting? I said, no. I said, not a bit. Anyway, he said, well, I'll get the suit for you. I said, you won't. I said, I'm not going up there dressed like a bloody penguin. I said, not for them or anybody. So I wouldn't go, but since then I've invited us again to an ordinary day and sit down and have dinner with them and tea with them. Because a lot of them up there were prisoners of war.
Mm.
Jap prisoners of war.
Up at Chelsea?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to do. We're going to have just an ordinary day up here.
Lovely.
Dress ordinary.
Yes.
I don't dress up here like that. I've got no time for them. They have no time for us when we come home. And I don't forget.
Mm.
They didn't look after us. I mean, say they don't now because a lot of them, they don't even get a pension or anything. They live in. I go to Havre regularly. I go to Havre. I go to Bury, I go to Ipswich. I still go around seeing the old boys. We go out and have a meal and that and a talk and a laugh. And but they're only living on their pensions.
Mm.
And that's the way they treat us. The way they treat any person in the services, I suppose. But I still go around and see them.
Well, Harold, it's been absolutely fascinating listening to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they come down. Will I go no further?